So, oh, this is always the juggle of both things. We'll do our best. As we said, we should give more attention to everybody here. That's for sure. When I look at the computer, sometimes it's just because I'm reading from it, because it's the advantage of the computer is that I can make it larger. So that's my one advantage. So it's not like I'm looking at the people, but I like the text on the computer. Okay, so what we're going to do today is we're going to continue from where we left off last week. Now, last week we were talking about, as we saw, the mitzvah of Shemitah, exactly, as talking about rain, farmers. And I know we've done it in the past because it was mentioned in Parashas Mishpatim as well. But here is where it's really mentioned at length. The big bulk of all the halachas are here. And it is a little drop technical, it's true. So what we're going to do today is we're going to try and get through a few of more of the commentaries inside. And then, hopefully, we're going to wrap it all up nicely together so we get a nice picture of all, first of all, the mitzvah itself and obviously the benefits and how it even applies to us today. So today we will do that. I hope next week we will do a little bit of the mitzvah of Yovel, which is the Jubilee, which is a little bit less known. That's the 50th year or the seventh after the seven cycles. It has its own uniqueness, although it is in a way a super Shemitah year, so it's very similar and it does follow. So that we'll see next week. But today we'll wrap up. So we read these psukim. So on the sheets that you have in front of you, I know I made them again, but just you can see it. I'll just read in English the psukim to get a recap, and then we're going to go into some of the Rashis that we didn't do last week. So it says Hashem on page one. Hashem spoke to Moshe on Har Sinai, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land that I give you, the land shall observe a Shabbos rest for Hashem." As we said last week, fascinating. The land itself has a Shabbos. Hashem spoke to now page two, we go to, "For 6 years you may sow your field, for 6 years you may prune your vineyard, and you may gather in its crop, but on the seventh year a complete rest there shall be for the land, a Shabbos for Hashem. Your field you shall not sow, and your vineyard you shall not prune." Just wanted to see, there was one Rashi here, I think. No, in Pasuk Hey, I just read Pasuk Hey, and I just wanted to do one Rashi. Then it mentioned this concept of es sviach kitzircha, the aftergrowth. As we mentioned, doesn't mean aftergrowth, it means what grows on its own. "Of your harvest you shall not reap, and the grapes of your keeping away you shall not," on the next page it goes on, "pick. It shall be a year of rest for the land." Now just coming back to page number two, in Pasuk Hey, it said that you shall not reap, right? So in other words, it's an interesting thing. It says the aftergrowth of your harvest, as we said, that which grew on its own, you shall not reap. So Rashi says, what does it mean you shall not reap? So on the bottom, number five, it says, "Afilu loizarata," even if you did not sow it, "v'hit samcha," and it sprouted, "min hazara shenofel ba be'es hakatzir," from the seed that fell into the ground at the time of the previous year's harvest. What does loisik tzar, you shall not reap? This is interesting. Lihiyais machzikba, to take possession of it, ka'asher katzir, like other harvests. Ella, what should you do? Hefker yihiyah, this is a very big word, the word hefker, it shall be ownerless, lakol, for all to take freely. What does that mean? So I just want to show you something. If you look on the bottom, note number seven, the Gur Aryeh, who was the Maharal, who explains Rashi, he says beautifully, he says, what's Rashi saying and what's his question, so to speak? The Pasuk says an interesting thing. It says, "Loi siktzar," you shall not reap. It doesn't say, "Loi sikach," you shall not take. So what does that mean? It means you can take it. But what is the difference? So as he explains, if you look at number seven, and it says, had the Torah meant that it is forbidden to take it under any circumstances, it would have said, "Loi sikach," you shall not take. But what it just means is that it's not yours, technically speaking, so you can take it the same way that somebody else can take it. So that's the important thing. And we'll see how that flows a little bit more soon. Where would we see a difference? Let me see. Okay, so then he says, "Nizirecha," of your keeping away. So he says that you kept away and separated, Rashi says, and separated, let's see how Rashi continues, people from them, and you did not relinquish ownership from them. That's a problem. If you do that, then you can't have that. Then we'll see in a minute, are you permitted to enjoy that. In other words, if you decide to put some aside and say, yeah, I'm worried I won't have what to eat, even if I didn't plan to. But now, are you allowed to have derive benefit from that, or are you not allowed to derive benefit once you've set it aside? So we'll see in a second, the next pasuk. But Rashi just says, let me just see. Here he says, okay, the next Rashi says, Lo siftzor, you shall not pick those that you wish to keep from others, which is that can be a problem. Ein chabaitzer, you may not pick, but you may pick from those whose ownership have been relinquished. Okay, so let's understand. I just want to see something on that one. That one has a number one. Look on the bottom, the note number one. On the bottom it says from Teres Khan. Very interesting. So this is on page 3, on the bottom note number one. It says, the aftergrowth of your harvest you shall not reap. What does that teach us? That one may not reap the produce of the seventh year like the produce of other years. What way? In that one must relinquish ownership of it. On the basis of that verse alone, however, we may have thought that if one does not relinquish ownership of the crops that grew on their own, maybe the produce becomes permanently forbidden, right? Maybe when you thought, oh, it's mine, and now it's finished. It like, you can't touch it anymore. So we see that the pasuk continues, and it tells us something else. He says like this. So therefore, he says, the grapes of your keeping away, you shall not pick. What does that help teach us? Teaches us that it is forbidden only so long as there exists intent to keep it. If one relinquishes ownership before picking the produce, it is not forbidden. So even if initially you had the wrong thoughts, but then you changed, you realized you were doing the wrong thing, it's not forbidden anymore, which is interesting, which is a good thing, because in Torah, even though usually thought doesn't disqualify something, we have a few cases that it can. And here we're showing it's okay, as it's a hard thing to do, but once you've come to it, now it can be used. It is permitted to be used, obviously, not just by you, but by others, because you're relinquishing control. Okay, that was an important technicality, as we say, but I just want to, even though there's another opinion, it says Rashi's opinion is different to somebody else. I want to read you one more, and we'll see what is, yes, forbidden if you think wrong. So let's go to Pasuk Vav. So we'll go back, it's still on page 3. If you look at the pasuk says on the top of page 3, "V'hoisa Shabbos ha'aretz," right? The land, the resting of the land shall be yours. La'achla, a very important word, to eat. Very interesting. So it's for us to eat. We don't own it, but we can definitely eat it. And as he says, for who? I'm missing here. Okay, l'cha. That's right. La'avdecha, la'masecha, l'schircha. For your mate. So it's for you, for your slave, for your maidservant, and for your hired worker. Very interesting equalizing here. You are now equal to all of those people who all those 6 years depended on you for what they eat, which is quite a powerful thing, quite a powerful underlying theme of the mitzvah of Shemitah. And who else? Ulatay Shavcha, Hagoram Imach, and those who reside with you. Just sorry, I know I'm going back and forth, but if you look into the Rashi on 6, because that's back on page 3, same page, I want to show you something interesting. It says in Vav, V'hoisa Shabbos Ha'aretz. So Rashi says, Afal pi, she'asartim alecha, even though I forbade the fruits of the seventh year to you, loy ba'achila, v'loy ba'hana'a asartim. Rashi points out why the pasuk has to stress these words. Because I did not forbid them for eating, nor for any other benefit. This is such an important line. Only that you should not treat them as your owner does. Ella, as he says, as an owner, right? As if you're an owner. Ella, hakol yihyu shavim ba. All should be equal. In other words, equal rights. You know, the first socialist concept. We'll see soon if Terry believes in socialism. But this is a bit of a socialist idea, right? We're equalizing everybody. All the financial, economic, you know, benefits in a sense. But anyways, over here we say everybody has equal rights in the produce of the seventh year. Ata uschircha v'sayshavcha, you and your hired worker and the one who resides with you. The next Rashi says, Shabbos ha'aretz lachem la'achla. What does that mean? The resting of the land shall be yours to eat. So he says, min hashavus ata eichel. From that which has been rested from, in other words, from the produce that grow from untilled land, that you may eat. But what are you not permitted to eat? from that which has been kept. That's a problem. And I want to show you number three, note number three. What does it mean, that which has been kept? So let's see. It says on the bottom, note number three, from that which has been kept, Rashi means that which has been grown from the start with the intent to be kept. And this is a problem. So he says like this, produce that grew as the result of forbidden agricultural work performed on the seventh year. This is interesting. So if you actually planted in the seventh year, right? So you didn't just, before we mentioned if something grew on its own. Here, if you actually planted, it's a bigger problem. Then what happens, he says, unlike produce that grew by itself, but from which ownership was not relinquished, but that's okay if afterwards you relinquish it. But as we see, produce that as a result of forbidden work may not be eaten, even if it is subsequently made available to be taken for free by the public. Because once you've planted in that seventh year, it's like, that's not allowed. So that's not permissible to be used by anybody. That's the biggest problem. Okay, so it's fascinating because you see how Rashi learns, and we learn halacha from all the different phrases in the psukim. Very interesting system. Okay, just want to go a little drop more into the Rashis, and then we're going to see, as I say, a few of the commentaries, and then put it all nicely, but see how he says. Okay, okay, the other one is really quite similar. Okay, but I'll just read you the English of the next Rashi, L'chol la'avdacharet, as we said, your slave, your maidservant, for you. So he says, since it says with reference to the seventh year, and the destitute of the people shall eat, one might be able to think that the fruits of the seventh year should be forbidden to the rich with regard to eating. You see, this is such a fascinating thing, talking about socialism. We're really equalizing here. Here, it's not that it's only set aside for the poor, no. We are talking about everybody being equal. The owner of the land is equal in, so to speak, rights to take it as much as the poor person on the streets. Fascinating thing. It says, but that's why the verse tells us, for you and for your slave and for your maidservant. See now that the owners and the slaves and the slave women are all stated here, all eligible, all equally allowed to partake of what grows on its own in the seventh year. Okay, very quickly, I want to do one more Rashi. See inside, yeah? Okay, because on the next page with Pasuk Zayin, so go to page number four, then he continues, as we mentioned, and Ula v'emtecha, right, and to you for your animals, and for your beasts, asher ba'artzecha, to your cult, v'asa le'echol, all of its crops shall be to eat. So quite a powerful thing that we have. It's not only for other people, but it's also for the animals. It's very interesting. What this means is that your land, you don't own it at all, in any sense of the word. It's quite, we don't think of it like, you think, help, at least be protected. It's literally ownerless. It means animals can also come in and enjoy the crop, and you can't stop them. Let's see what he says in the Rashi. Rashi 7, he asks actually why we have both terms. There's two. There's animals which are called behema, which are the domesticated animals, and chaya, which are like, the wild animals that are out there. Exactly. So let's see what Rashi says. He says, if a beast, chaya, like the undomesticated, ownerless animal, may eat of the fruit of the seventh year, then you would imagine, is it not true? All the more so that a domesticated animal may eat, right? Because we know, for its food is upon you. In other words, you're responsible for them, so obviously. So in other words, why do we need both words? So then he says, why then does the verse mention, and for the domesticated animal? Why? Because it compares a wild beast from the field, which means, very interesting, he says like this, all the while that a particular type of produce is freely available for the wild beast, then you can feed your animal from the house. In other words, you may store a supply of that type of produce for your domestic animal, right? But if it has been finished for the wild beast in the field, in other words, if it's no longer found in the field, then get rid of it for your animal from the house, which means take out what you have stored for your animal and make it available for all. It's very interesting because we see here, not only are we equalizing people, but we're equalizing, in a sense, almost the animals and who you're responsible for and who you're not responsible for. Again, it's a very interesting thing here. We see a very fascinating underlying thing. It's all God's. God runs the world. So technically and truthfully, it's not just technically, the practically, we are responsible for the animals that we have, you know, our cows, our chickens. But here in the year of Shemitah, we show who really feeds everybody. It's Hashem. And it's very interesting. Even practically, you have to make sure to, you know, to keep everything properly running. Very interesting how that works. Okay, I think that's all for the Rashis. Now, we're going to go to, I'm almost sure. Oh, no. Let's go to the next page. I want to show you something. I can't remember last week, these, I think we mentioned, but I don't remember if we read. These psukim are, if you see, they don't follow right away, because we read now, it's all pasuk 7, Zayin, and now I'm skipping. You see, it's pasuk, on page number 5, it's pasuk Yud Ches and Yud Tes. But these are very important psukim because these come after the Jubilee. Hashem comes back to the questions that we will have. So after he gives the mitzvah, as we said, it's all very nice and good on paper when we're reading about it and it's all theory. But practically speaking, when you're talking to real farmers who have to really live like this, this is no simple ask. And therefore, what will be the reaction as we know? So it says like this in Pasuk Yutes, Vinos naharetz piria, right? And the earth will give its fruit, v'chaltem, and you will eat l'soiva, to be satisfied. And as he says, it's a very beautiful promise, v'yishavtem lavetach aleha, and you will dwell securely in the land. This is part of the reward, if you want to say, of the mitzvah of Shemitah, that you will have that sense of security, not obviously economically only, but even more, even, so to speak, from the enemies that are around that you. One of the reasons, I'll just share with you an interesting thing, is that one of the negatives, it says, one of the punishments or consequences, actually, of not keeping the mitzvah of Shemitah, it says, is actually exile. The land will not allow you to stay upon it. This is said a few times in the Chumash as well as in the prophets afterwards. So you see that it's an interesting thing how, even though it doesn't seem so connected, the mitzvah of Shemitah literally provides us with that sense of security that we will be able to keep the land. We will stay there, we will live on it, and it will remain ours. It's interesting, we'll see soon why is it so connected. But just to go here, let's see how he says. So what will a person say? Very nice, beautiful promises. But a person will say, right in Pasuk Chaf. Well, if you will say, Hashem knows us. So he's already putting the question forward. He says, if you will say, what will we eat? Bashana Hashvis, in the 7th year. Hein lo nizra, v'lo nesef es tefuaseinu, right? Because we're not going to sow, and we're not going to gather our crop. And that's why Hashem promises, as we mentioned last week, this beautiful pasuk, v'tzivisi es perchasi, that I will command my blessing, lachem b'shana hashishis, that in the 6th year, and it will make the, it will yield a crop sufficient for 3 years. That's on page 6. Just one more pasuk, and I want to do a Rashi on page 5 again. But uzratem, and what will happen? Uzraatem es hashana hashminis. So you will sow in the 8th year. Va'achaltem min hatfua yoshan, and you will eat. But obviously, it won't grow right away. So you'll eat from the old crop. Ad hashana hachis, until the 9th year. Ad baitfu asa, until the arrival of the crop, taichlu yashan, you will eat the old. Okay, very interesting. That's the bracha, as we mentioned, the 3-year bracha. There'll be enough. You don't have to worry. Okay, just to see something interesting. Just an interesting thing to point out. When the pasuk says, you will say, v'chisaymra, you will say, what will we eat? It's actually interesting because many of the commentaries mention everything, every word in Torah is holy. So the question remains a question. And what it means is that it's a valid question. And in life, a lot of times, we can have this question. We shouldn't beat ourselves up if we have the question. But what we should do is not leave it at the question, rather look to what the Torah tells us, and obviously deepen our trust in Hashem, and find a way of resolving it. But the question is a question that will plague you forever, because that's human nature. That's the way we are. That's the way Hashem made us. That's normal, and that's expected. But let's see how he says. I wanted to show you something in the Rashi 18, two things. So Rashi 18, if you see, that's on back on page 5, yes. Okay, so he says, V'yashavtem al ha'aretz levetach, right, you shall dwell securely in the land. As we said, Shaba'ava in Shemitah, for through the sin of not observing Shemitah, Yisrael goylim, the Jewish people go into exile, as it says, then the land will appease its Shemitah years. And it will make its Shemitah appeasing, which, oh my gosh, so the 70 years of the Babylonian exile, corresponds to the 70 Shemitah years that they neglected. Let's see if it says it on the bottom. There was a very interesting gematria. It says like this, that in seven, how does it work? In 7 years, there was a thing about the number that it even fit for the 70 years, but I can't remember how it went. Yes, that's because it's 50. I'll look it up soon. I'll see if I can find it now. It said it here. I want to see something interesting. Because literally it's like a direct consequence of the lack of the keeping of the Shemitah. Let's see something. It says, okay, so there are 52 Shabbases in the year. And in seven years that, oh, this is interesting. This is different. Sorry, it's a different point here. But just generally, it's very interesting. It says that there are, we know, we have 52 weeks in the year, 52 Shabbases. So if you times 52 Shabbases by 7 years, that's 364. Which is why we keep a year of Shemitah for 365 days, corresponding to perhaps when we didn't keep Shabbos 100%, and so that atones for all the Shabbosim of the seven-year cycle. But there's also, I forgot, there's also a concept of the years of Shemitah that weren't kept corresponding to the 70 years of exile that they unfortunately were sent into. Okay, I just want to see just one thing here in the Rashi. Then, look at Rashi number 9. It says there's a 4 there, but 19. It says, and the land will give, and you will dwell securely upon it. So what does that mean? He says, Shaloi titagu, a very big word, you shall not have, you will have no worry, mishnas batzayres, of a year of drought. So another interesting promise from keeping Shemitah is not only that you'll be living securely in your land, but actually Hashem will provide rainfall, there will be no drought. Another reward, so to speak, for the mitzvah of Shemitah. Okay, let's see. Now I'd like to go now to page 13. Oh, it says a 13 on the top. I know it's a bit of a... Okay, let's see. Something interesting. This is some... we won't do all the commentaries inside. We'll do some, a little, a few words inside, but I just want to get through. It says this... Oh, I can't see them. Okay, so there's the Kli Yakar on the top of page 13. There's a number 5 there. On the side, you see it says Bahar Sinai. Remember last week we spoke extensively about this concept of Har Sinai. So the Kli Yakar tells us something very beautiful. I'll read some of it inside, like I say. He says, you know, the big question, what's the connection between Shemitah and Har Sinai? So he says on the top line, Karav Lishmaya, it's close to here. In other words, it makes sense for us. Kisha'olam Moshe, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up on Har Sinai, after the 7 weeks, you see, Achar Shiva Shavuos, the 7 weeks, Shesofru Yisrael, that the Jewish people counted, Mem Tesyon, 49 days from Pesach till Shavuos. What happened on Har Sinai then? The mountain became a holy mountain, and Hashem gave us the Torah. That was on the 50th day. So he says, Vehu, and that's similar to Zman, Meshichas HaYayvel, the concept, as we said, of the Jubilee. As we say, Likroi Dror, and we didn't mention this, but the idea of Jubilee is freedom, liberty, the concept of Jubilee, it's the year of liberty, the Chofshi L'chol Yisrael, and freedom for the entire Jewish people. And he says this is very similar to, as we can see, the 7 years. So we count up 7 weeks, we get to the giving of the Torah, and then there's the concept of the 49 days, which corresponds to the 7 cycles of 7, then we get to the Jubilee. But we see something interesting. What's the comparison? So he says a beautiful thing. Shebemispar Shiva, in the number 7, ubemispar Memtes, Aninoisim Kedusha, Hashem says, I give a special holiness into the number 7 and the number 49 to the entire land and Jewish people. Sheyeshla Dimyoin V'yichus Im Har Sinai. It has a similarity to Har Sinai. What has a similarity? The land of Israel. Very interesting thing. So the Kli Yakar says that the experience that we have in Israel, living in Israel, is similar to the experience that the Jewish people had at the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. And a very fascinating thing that we are told, it says, Mitzad heyaisa avira demachkin. There's a very famous line that the air of the land of Israel makes you more intelligent, or provides wisdom, as they say. You know, there's all the famous stories about the children of Jerusalem being very intelligent, and all the jokes that they were asked. I mean, people asked them all these questions, like, what could you buy with one coin that is worth much more, and the child went to buy salt. And all this kind of, like, all these different things. But Israel is known to be a land. I mean, you see it even now. I shouldn't say, but that's all. Yeah, it's a land which somehow makes the inhabitants more intelligent. What does this mean? It means just like at Har Sinai, we received the wisdom of Hashem, Hashem's Torah, when we enter the land of Israel, which gives us and provides us and literally, in a sense, almost refines us enough to pursue a higher intellectual ability. It is also important for us to mark the seventh as holy. So very beautiful comparison, the Kliyakar says. Quite an interesting thing that shows us something else, another dimension to the concept of Shemitah. And obviously then freedom. Now let's go to number 6 on this page, which is the Ara Chaim. So it's still page 13. And the Ara Chaim HaKadosh says, maybe it's actually hiskir matnas haaretz, since it is mentioning the gift of the land, right? As he says, Asher ani noisein, that I am giving you. That's why perhaps it also mentions Har Sinai. Why? What's the connection? Loimar ki machmas Har Sinai, to tell us that it's because of Har Sinai, mashekiblu, by what we received at Mount Sinai, he shenigmira hamatana sha'al menas taira nosan Hashem es haaretz. It is because of the Torah that Hashem has given us the land, which means Shemitah has another interesting thing. It connects the land of Israel with the concept of Torah, that it's not something that we can separate. A Jew who wants to live in the land of Israel, we all do, and that's not just wants to live, but feels a connection to Israel, realizes that what is it that provides our connection? It's the Torah. So it's inseparable. And that's also why it mentions by the mitzvah of Shemitah that Dafka was given at Har Sinai. Such an important thing to remember about it. Okay, just now we go to the next page, which is, so there's a 14 on the next page, because this was from last week, but there's a number 7 near the commentary that I'll just tell you quickly a little bit orally. This is the Ramban, a very long Ramban, and he says something also very beautiful. There's a very famous Ramban, Nachmanides, at the beginning of Chumash Bereishis, which tells us that the way Hashem created the world, he created the world in 6 days, and then the seventh day he rested. But they're not just arbitrary 6 days. The 6 days actually correspond to the 6 millennium, to the 6,000 years. It's a very famous thing. Here the Ramban qualifies, and he actually says the truth is that what really corresponds are the 6 years of the cycle of Shemitah, and the seventh year being Shemitah, because the year corresponds to the 1,000 years. And a very fascinating idea that the Ramban says is that there will come a time, the 7,000 after, where the world will actually, in the way we know it, come to an end, and then it will be reborn in a new form, in a spiritual form. This is not accepted by all commentaries. The Rambam, Maimonides, doesn't agree. He says the world will continue to exist the way we have it, whatever it is, not the way, I mean, obviously on a whole different plane, but physically. But the point here is a very interesting one, that it's such a cosmic mitzvah. It's a mitzvah which shows us that every aspect of the world and the whole history of the world, from the beginning of creation till as the world and as everything evolves, is all governed by Hashem. And when we actually keep the mitzvah, which seems so disconnected, almost like a farmer not working the land, that actually internalizes this idea that there's a very big picture happening. And this whole world and every day accumulates to a month, to a year, to thousands of years, all are part of one big consecutive picture to get to the true revelation of the seventh year, of the 7,000. Of revelation of godliness. So very powerful concept also. That's what the Ramban tells us. And actually we should never forget it, as he says, something that we have to always remember. And that's also why he says that the idea of Golos, of exile, being part of the process, because when we don't acknowledge that, well then we can't stay in our land, because the whole point of it is that there should be this holiness that we're supposed to, and it's not only implied, like literally bring the land to a level of the seventh year being holy, that's the whole purpose, and you're not keeping the purpose, what are you doing there? And then you have to go to exile. Okay, that was that one. Let's go now to see, there's one or two more that are, the Akedah, I don't want to do inside of it. No, I'm sure the Akedah, maybe I'll share it right now actually. Very beautiful idea, the Baal Akedah says. Let's see, I get over here very, very nicely. So I'm going to read you some of the words of the Akedah as a translation. Let's see where it is. Okay. Yeah, so he says an interesting thing. Also, very fascinatingly, the Rambam actually has an interesting view. You know, the Rambam, we say it many times, looks at things quite rationally. So we did mention last week, we spoke about the fact that the land needs to rejuvenate. So simply leaving, the Rambam says, you work the land for 6 years, so you let the land rest on the 7th year, and that gives it back its strength, you know, kind of a thing, physically even. It's good for it agriculturally, so that's a positive thing. So the Akedas Yitzchak says, no, he disagrees, he says, doesn't make sense. Because if that's the case, then the land wouldn't give on the 6th year so much extra produce, because it would be at its weakest point if the 7th year is meant to give it back its strength. So it doesn't make the picture right, he says. And says also, why such a terrible punishment for not keeping the mitzvah of Shemitah, if that's the reason? Because the truth is, if that's the reason, then it's my choice to decide if I want my land to give good, you know, give good produce or be very tired. So obviously there's something much deeper. So he says a beautiful thing. He says that the Shemitah and Yovel are windows to open blind eyes, which are immersed in the sights of the immediate time. It's a very beautiful language that he uses. So we open our eyes, and now, as we said now with the Ramban, but it's a different way of saying it, that we look at things with a much bigger perspective, a much broader picture. And we don't just think of the moment, so to speak. As he says, they are meant to make man aware that the world was created by and functions through the desires of Hashem, which means Shemitah is also intended to take man out of his rote style of living, where he's totally involved in his work and subjected to drudgery. He must know that the perfection of man and not work is his mission in life. So all of these things is why it deserves such a severe consequence. Because if you don't do it, then you won't remember why you're here. Okay. As he says, a very interesting thing, he says, a person should not be enslaved to his own labor. Instead, he should be content with earning just enough to sustain himself. Okay, this is an interesting thing. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says it a little bit differently. He says, as we just said now, that the person should not be a slave to his work. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says that a person shouldn't convince himself that he's the master of his work. So it's two different ways of looking at it. It's the same thing. Not, you don't become a slave to your work, and you don't delude yourself that you are the master over your work. So it actually helps in both. Okay. Let's just see. I want to see if there's one that I want to do one more inside here. I'm going down. Oh, I want to show you something here. So there's just two more inside. I think it's on that same page that has a number 14. And it says like this on, no, not 14, so we're going to go to the next page. Sorry, yeah. The next page is page 15. So if you look at page 15 of your copies, you'll see on the bottom, there's an 8 and a 9 on the bottom, which is the Al-Sheikh. And the Al-Sheikh, it's very short, I'll read you very quickly. He says, "Kidei sha'umais yiru," so that the nations of the world, in other words, all the nations that live around you, will see she'einchem listim v'gazaltem haaretz. It's such a powerful thing. They'll see that you are not, literally we translate it as robbers, or I don't know if there's a better word for it, that you haven't stolen the land. It's interesting how it happens through all the generations that the people around us say the land of Israel doesn't belong to us. When we keep Shemitah, we prove that it's ours. Why? Because he says, Yairu b'shvisa. How does Shemitah show anything? Sha'aretz l'Hashem, that the land belongs to God. V'nasna l'asher chafetz, and he gave it to whomever he desires. That's why it says, Shabbos l'Hashem, the loyel Hashem ha'aretz v'harayel l'kach she'shanim tizra. So it's a Shabbos actually, which provides the concept that God runs the world, and if God runs the world, He can decide who the land belongs to. If you don't keep Shemitah, and you in a sense almost live with a, which means that you're living with a principle of that you are the one that has to work the land, meaning you own the land and it's yours, well then what right do you have to own the land over somebody else? Who said? But if God owns the land, he can decide. And this is a very important principle also of the mitzvah Shemitah. This also is why it helps us with the security of the land. It's quite a powerful thing. That's what Al-Sheikh says. And then the Kli Yakar, one more Kli Yakar, he says very nicely here. So this is on the bottom of page 15, and there's a little number line. So it says, V'shav Saharetz. B'tam mitzvah zu yesh deis chalukas. We have many, many reasons. And I just want to share, we're not going to read the whole Kli Yakar, because he goes through many of the things that we've just mentioned. But I want to show you one, just a drop of a deeper layer that he puts into it. He says, what will happen if a person works the land for 6 years, which he does, if a person continues to work the land consistently and never does any of the mitzvahs of Shemitah, a person will inevitably delude themselves that it's me who provides the success, that everything depends on me. And I'll show you the words. He says, and therefore a person, we know the famous line that it says in Chumash, a person will say, Kaychi va'aitzem yadi, that it's my strength and the strength of my hand which has provided me with all of my tremendous success. So that's why, what does Hashem do? Hashem says, no, I've got to make it extreme. I have to take you out of that mindset. And he takes us literally to the other extreme. This is the other extreme. I'll tell you what I mean by other extreme. Because we know in Torah we have the concept of giving tzedakah. We've mentioned many times that tzedakah is not either such a rational thing. Because if I work for my money, I can do what I want with it, right? I could give it to somebody else if I choose, but I shouldn't have to, right? Because if I don't want to, I worked for it. So tzedakah already sort of shifts our mindset from the fact that it's mine and it's because I worked for it and therefore I deserve, I own it in that sense. But Shemitah is a deeper, it's a whole different experience. This is much, much more, in a sense, than just giving away a little bit of your what you've worked for. Because if you think about it with Shemitah, literally everything that you own is not yours anymore. I mean, that's crazy. That's not just, that's really a hard thing. As we said, the farm becomes ownerless. Anybody's welcome to come into your farm and to take what they want from it. And you can't even set aside some of the food for yourself and say, it looks like this is running out. I'll grab some more of those grapes so that I have some for Shabbos. No, you can take some for the day before maybe, but that's it, not more. So it's an amazing, what a mindset. Everything you've worked for and now it equally belongs to everybody else. So the words that the Kli Yakar, if you see, I don't know if I bracketed in yours. Ooh. Okay, so there's a beautiful, yes, I did. If you look, it's on page 16, and there's a big star near it, and it says, V'oid. There's a little bracket there. V'oid neis b'soich neis, he says, beautiful. He says, what's going to happen? There's going to be a miracle within a miracle. How's it going to be a miracle within a miracle? So he says, She'achar she'zarasa she'shanam, after you've planted for 6 years. Now this is the encouragement because it's such a difficult mitzvah. So he says, "Im b'shana hashishis lo yachach ischela." Not only that, in the sixth year it won't be weaker, right? And maybe he says, if it won't be weaker, he nevuchal akachas lo yosef lo kayach. Usually, definitely, it won't be increased in its strength. V'amar Hashem. So what does Hashem tell us? Ad rabbe, she b'shana hashishis yosef lo kayach kol kach. That I will show you who's really the master over everything and who really controls. So you don't have to worry about being so crazy, as he says. What will happen in the sixth year? Not only it won't be weaker, but it will have so much extra strength. As we mentioned, v'tzivisi es berchasi, that I have commanded my bracha on the sixth year, that it will make enough for 3 years. I just want to share one thing before we go. Okay, maybe we'll come back to that one thing. I want to just, it goes after. I'll show you one last little line and I come back here. He says, and this is the same idea. So therefore what will happen is, two things. First of all, what does it mean that the sixth year will give more? Not necessarily will it quantitatively give more, but in quality it will be more. That's another beautiful thing. That when you eat the food of the sixth year, you'll be full with less. Quite a fascinating thing that will happen to that produce. So it's again a miracle in a miracle. The produce itself is like miraculous. It has such a good quality. The other thing also is that what will happen is, because you will experience all these miracles, it will definitely direct your eyes to God. And you will realize, I can take a deep breath, it's okay, because Hashem really controls the world. The other interesting thing is that the Kli Yakar says, it goes in this interesting cycle. We gave a general thing, 6 years and the seventh year. But we know also, a fascinating thing, let me just see something here, that there's a concept, remember we've mentioned that in the third year, and in the sixth year, there's an idea of giving Meiser Ani, right? Remember, we give a special Meiser to the poor people in the third year of the Shemitah cycle and in the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle. And this is very connected also to the idea that the sixth year gives enough for 3 years. So very powerful concept that ties in. That's why also throughout the 6 years, when we are working the land, we don't forget about Shemitah. We remember all the time that there's something above us. Even though we are working the land, somebody else is actually controlling the output, what will come out. Just want to see if there's one more little thing. Yeah. Oh, and I just want to read you one line. There's a little star on the right side, if you see. And I just want to read you one beautiful line. He says, because we keep mentioning that the land has a Shabbos, v'shavs ha'aretz. It's the land's Shabbos. So he says a beautiful thing. He says that the land itself, gam ha'aretz atzma, the land itself, takpid al zema'id, is actually very concerned about this and takes it very personally if you keep the mitzvah of Shemitah. He says, ki lahem, ki ritzayna, because the will of the land, sheyiz galgel z'chus zeh al yada, lechaze ka'emuna b'Hashem. The land wants to be the means by which we strengthen our faith in Hashem. It's a very powerful thing, because when we keep Shemitah, then the produce of the sixth year is such incredible quality. So the land itself contributes to our miraculous existence and to our understanding that there's one God and that He's in control. So when we don't keep the mitzvah of Shemitah, we're depriving the land of that opportunity to implant in us Emunah. And the land gets very insulted and actually bears a grudge. And that's why ultimately it doesn't let us live there anymore. And that's why we are exiled. Quite a powerful thing. I think as a farmer, you would say that the land definitely feels certain things, or no? Some people have this thing about the land being very sensitive to...
Yes.
It's something.
It's... I had to leave. I was really upset and I had to leave. You just felt it was yours.
Yours. It's a deep connection. Yeah. You make a real connection. It's an interesting thing. This is a fascinating thing with the mitzvah Shemitah, with the connection to the land. No. Tell me. You can, Rona, you can say. Yeah, it's an amazing.
And, I only do it in Israel.
Yeah, that's right. Only in Israel.
That's what he said.
It's true.
I only do it in Israel.
Anywhere else. It's a very good point that you're making. It is only a mitzvah for Israel. One of the big things is because it does take a special blessing, and that's only in Israel that Hashem promises that. It's a fascinating thing. But we're going to see soon, it's true, but we still have to learn a lesson from it for us even out of Israel. So practically we don't do it with the land, but the lessons of Shemitah, that we have to, our perspective has to be...
I can understand where all that tzedakah comes from.
Exactly right. But it really gives us that perspective in such a clear way. So just before, there's a beautiful, beautiful, again, I know last week we did a little bit of a sicha, but it's a beautiful one. I just want to share, I heard a very nice, was it just a very nice podcast? I just heard a few minutes. It was something, I don't remember exactly, but about the mitzvah of Shemitah, because this year is the mitzvah of Shemitah. And the way this person was explaining, I'm sorry, I forgot his name, it's not nice, but anyways, was that he put it in such a nice way, and I just want to share with you, it just sort of sums up in a way a little bit, a lot of what we've said, very clear, I felt. So he said that, as we mentioned a few times, this mitzvah, it has so many different aspects to it, and it seems to, in a sense, almost strengthen so many different principles of what we believe in, right, and how we live our life. But on a very basic level, it seems to be quite a social kind of a mitzvah, if you want to say an economic, social construct mitzvah, which helps society function the way it does. It does lend a certain equalizer into the mix of things. Human nature is such, not just human nature, but the human being is a being which, as we know, is not naturally equal. Whatever people are going to say, there's no equality because, first of all, some people have a higher level of intelligence, just natural. Doesn't mean everybody can't learn, but that's a fact. Comes easier to them. Some people are born into more, right? Just they're born into more, so they're already advantaged, so to speak. Some people have luck, whatever it may be. Life is not equal forever. We don't all have equal opportunity. I think, I hope everybody can agree, whether we want it or not, that's the fact. us living in Sydney, there's no question that we have lots of advantages over the people who are living in the middle of Africa, who really are a lot of steps behind. Doesn't mean their life can't be good. I'm not saying they don't have a good life and can't have a meaningful life, but just in the sense of economics, it's definitely not equal. There's no question about it. Now, Torah is not a socialist religion, so to speak. Doesn't even have one economic system, actually. It's a mixture of many. And Torah doesn't necessarily say that everybody is equal. It does say that everybody has opportunities and that everybody can come close to Hashem in their own way. But what Torah does do, and this is a very powerful thing, is that it does reset things every once in a while, which means that it gives incredible opportunity for everybody to grow and for somebody not to be in a permanent state of, like, failure, if you want to say. Nobody can, so to speak, if you follow the Torah system properly, you cannot get into a rut and remain there. It doesn't work that way. Torah puts different things into place where that won't happen. So let's say for our mitzvah, like we're talking about here. So it's a very interesting thing. There's three, just to summarize, this gives us a little bit, there's really three major components to the mitzvah of Shemitah, if you think about it. So the one component was, as we said, that the farmer actually doesn't work the land. What does that mean, he doesn't work the land? So it means that the year of Shemitah, if you think about it, the farmer has a lot of spare time. Okay, he's not working the land. So in other words, it's quite beneficial in that way for the farmer, but it's actually quite disruptive. It's disruptive to him. It's not the normal way of life. You know, when we think about ourselves, sometimes when, you know, we wait for holidays, but then when the holidays comes, it's not so simple. We think like, oh, so how are we going to structure our day, right? We are mostly, not everybody, some people are very motivated on their own. Some people do need a bit of external structure to motivate them to get things done. So this is an interesting thing that we're throwing into the spanner 1 year, and it's not a day, and it's not a week, it's a full year, where you really have to find the motivation so much from within. It's not the regular thing, not the regular duties of farming, nothing like that is happening. So that's the first thing that happens. The second thing is that we have this equality, so to speak, where everybody has equal access to the land, right? As we said, anybody's allowed in, so you don't even own the land anymore. Not only aren't you working the land, but it's not yours. The last thing that we said, that we didn't mention this, and it's an important one I want to mention, it's mentioned more in Chumash Devarim, is that another thing happens in the year Shemitah. Again, this is not a halacha class, so I can't go into depth how the halachic of it works, but all debts are erased. Okay, so that's a big question how that works, but just theoretically to understand that if you owe somebody money when the year Shemitah comes, it's wiped away. What does that mean? So all these three things show us something very powerful, very, very deep. First of all, with the first one, it allows the person to give him time to reframe why he's alive. What's his purpose in life? It takes him away from his constant material pursuits, because you're not so involved. I mean, you're not involved in the farming. Obviously, the idea is now you can spend time on more spiritual pursuits. So already, it's such an incredible gift that lifts you out of the normal drudgery and lifts you out of feeling that as a human being you are bound by the materialism, that it almost has a hold on you. You're literally released from it. Now, the second thing, as we see, is about this idea that it's everybody's land. That's actually quite a deep concept, because that makes a person realize, first of all, takes away a lot of arrogance. I'm not more than you. We are all equal at this year. We all own the same land. We all own the same everything. So it equalizes in that sense. It gives a person a sense of humility. Somebody who perhaps after 6 years of producing a very successful, if it's a successful farmer, you can feel quite powerful. And here it strips that away. So it makes you realize, and also helps you relate to other people in a very different way. It's not even only about like equalizing in a sense where I'm giving you so you have the same. It's more we both are dependent on God. So it's not even me being the giver. It's quite a powerful thing. So it takes away that sense of I am more than you, and especially because of my material gains. Definitely doesn't define. Another thing also interesting, your income doesn't define you. It's not who you are. Every 7 years, you refocus and you realize, who am I? Who am I really? What defines me? how I'm serving Hashem, how I'm growing as a person. That's what defines me. And it's not what I own and what I've produced. So a very important, powerful concept of Shemitah. And then when you come to the last one, as we talk about all debts, so that's a very big one. Again, the idea being, because usually when somebody owes you something, firstly, there's that feeling of being beholden. So that's gone. But also you realize that truly who owns everything? You didn't own it to begin with. That's why the debt is not your, doesn't come back to you. Because it all belonged to God to begin with. So therefore, it releases you from that sense of holding on to things, material things, without the ability to relinquish, to yield. Very, very powerful. So all of these concepts of Shemitah give us such a focus on who we are and how we relate to ourselves, how we relate to others, and how we relate to Hashem. So that's why it is one of the most fundamental mitzvahs of the Torah. That's why, as we said, it is Har Sinai, and that's why you can't stay in the land if you don't keep it. Because it's the mitzvah, which, as we say, deepens our trust in God, our ability to see who's truly the owner, our ability to relate to each other in a much more, much deeper way than if it's just about what I own and what you own and what I don't own or what you don't own. It makes us be able to have that, and also to know who we really are. So it's such an incredible mitzvah in every facet of it. That's the lesson that we have to learn. And the Rebbe says very strongly, I know time is running, I want to show you one beautiful, in the back of your booklet, it says 10. I just want to read you one beautiful paragraph. So this mitzvah is kept in the land of Israel, as Rona says, but now, this year, we have to keep it spiritually. So it's a year for us to refocus. Okay, unlocking our doors, it's true. Nobody's allowed to trespass, that's true. But nevertheless, it is a year for us to really focus on what is truly ours and what is not truly ours. What is ours is only our spiritual gains. What is ours is what we give, as we say. What is ours is our relationships, but definitely not our material possessions. And of course, our bitachon in Hashem. So I just want to show you something beautiful. I'll tell you a little orally and I'll just read you one paragraph. So here the Rebbe was talking, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was addressing a Malava Malka, which I think was a fundraiser. And he was talking and he was encouraging the people and he was saying something very beautiful. He says that if we think about it as Jews, when we talk about us being advantaged, in a way, we're quite disadvantaged. A Jew who keeps Shabbos is very disadvantaged. Because what happens? Other people can work a whole day on Shabbos, and perhaps at the end of Shabbos, they've gained so much more wealth, and you are set back. And he says even more than that. Never mind that they gain so much wealth on Shabbos, but Shabbos is quite an expensive day. You have to spend money on the food, money on the guests. It's an expensive day. So Shabbos, and you give money to the poor, and you pay for an aliyah when you get an aliyah in shul. It's expensive. So not only aren't you earning, but you're spending. So your steps are even more steps behind. A person could think, oy vey. So that's why, what do we know? What does Hashem tell us? It's not about that. Keep Shabbos. I promise you, as the Hashem says, the sixth year will provide for you, for the seventh, for the eighth. You have nothing to worry about. We see that it's Hashem who provides everything to begin with. And He can make it happen if you don't work one day, because that's really the day that we really realize where everything is from. And I'll just find, I know we're in one beautiful paragraph inside, I want to show you. If you look at page 11, on the top of page 11, there's a little star near it. On the left side, I'll just read one paragraph. Das is a klarer Rahab. As oy ba'id hat bitachon in Eibishin, if a Jew has trust in Hashem, unerzacht loy nizara, and he says, I will not plant. Folk dois was der Eibishter heist, he follows what Hashem commands. Dan git der Eibishter a rein sein bracha, then Hashem gives his bracha, he literally inserts his blessing. As in der Zeit, wenn die Erde ist am schwachsten, at the time when the earth is at its weakest, it can give fruits three times as much. Vi in the best year, three times more even than the best year. Vi in the ersten year, even more than in the first year. There was one more, just want to see. Okay, I want to just read one more line. It's just before the Gimel, I don't know if you can see. It says, Aivden is der Anzug von Schmitta. Tutmin was der Eberster verlangt. If you do what Hashem demands, Hotman sein bracha, you have his blessing. A bracha nitnar in eilam haba, nar eichen eilam haza. Bracha not only in the world to come, but in this world. Oh, I forgot, I wanted to read more, but there was such a beautiful other line, and I don't know where it is. Okay. Anyways, but the point of it, as you can see, is that this mitzvah is such an incredible mitzvah of our focus, so to speak. But as we said with the Sefer, as we started last week with the Sefer HaChinuch, it strengthens our trust in Hashem. It gives us the ability to yield and to relinquish to others. It gives us the ability to know that Hashem created the world in 6 days, and the seventh day He rested. So it encompasses literally almost all the principles. And that's why it's such a powerful mitzvah. So it's something for us to work on every day while we are living our daily lives, even within the material, and that's the challenge, but still, that we should remember, even while we're doing all the normal things, that we are doing the normal things, but that's really just externally, because really internally, we rely on Hashem, and He's the one that gives us the success. So that's the, in a nutshell.